destruction to function. Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pouring at system divinations, how we build the justice. Welcome to planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice, build. Is to add on or do away with justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore the critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world.
Hi, I'm Evelina Carrillo, and I am co-hosting this episode of Building Justice alongside Jonathan Wong and Angelo Hinojosa. My peers and I are seniors in the photography program here at Sacramento State.
Today we are joined with Kachisade Madu, a freelancing photographer born, raised, and based here in Sacramento. Kachisade is a photographic activist of the people, stressing the battle for social justice, taking photographs designed to storytell, provoking deep thoughts while also bringing attention to inequalities and racial discrimination that particular demographics have historically faced. Just to name a few of his career accolades, while working alongside different organizations, he has fundraised over $12,000 in an effort to build two educational buildings in Ghana. He has also helped in distributing over 2,500 items to the unhoused community in Sacramento, and has work featured in the Crocker Art Museum here in downtown Sacramento.
Thank you for joining us today. We kind of wanted to start off by just introducing yourself a little bit.
Sure thing. First and foremost, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Kachisade Madu, local photographer from Sacramento, California, born and raised from the Valley High area of Sacramento. If you guys are all familiar with that area. Growing up, just wanted to be able to change the world one day at a time. So not knowing exactly how to do that initially, but then through experiences in life, through going to college and meeting people along my life, I've been able to kind of hone in on my purpose and how to go ahead and live that every day.
So kind of just to give our listeners a little background, Kachisade is a school guidance counselor and for the Elk Grove School District. He graduated from San Jose State from 2011 with a BA in psychology and University of San Francisco with the master's in school counseling. So photography and counseling from the outside perspective seem to be very different fields of work, but I kind of could see how you could use both of them to kind of complement one another. Can you kind of speak on how you use like the idea of like visual storytelling, like kind of just your process of what pushed you to take on both psychology and photography?
Yeah, most definitely. So, I mean, when I got my bachelor's in psychology, I had no idea that I was gonna go down the photography route. It wasn't until I got into San Francisco and I picked up a camera for the first time. And we all know that, you know, psychology is human behavior. Right, psychology is being utilized every day, from when we're kids to adults until we get old. So being able to use psychology, use the theories that I've learned in grad school, and apply them to interaction with people on the streets, to be able to ask them the right questions, to provoke emotions, and then being able to meet them on a humanity level, is where I feel like the psychology lens can cross over with photography. And I think I use that quite often when it comes to my portraits. Being able to have, you know, strong dialogue with folks who are considered strangers has been very powerful in not only my walk of life, but it has opened my eyes up to just the possibilities of humanity and understanding that we are all more alike than we are different. So I think psychology gave me the foundation of, one, how to be more of a human, and being mindful of different things that we all experience that can shape who we are as individuals, and then being able to use a camera to bring that to life and to storytell. And to be able to get a portrait, but then also have a deeper understanding of what is going on within his portrait has been really key.
So with that, we want to know more of like what your process is for seeking inspiration for like the work that you do. Because like with psychology and human behavior, that has a lot to do with photography now that like you're talking about it. And what have you like used that to hone in on the topics that you've chosen? Like for the Homeless to Heartful exhibition and the talk of solidarity.
Yeah, so I think when I first picked up my camera, I had no idea what I was doing, right? I think we all kind of can relate to that, right? As creatives and just kind of getting your feet wet and not knowing exactly like where you're gonna go. And later on when we go to the class, I'll kind of talk to you about my timeline and how I got to where I'm at right now. But, you know, just from my experience with photography, I really was studying the greats, especially when it comes to black and white portraits or street photography, with the Gordon Park, Jamal Shabazz, obviously, Spike Lee, Ava DuVernay. These are all folks who I have modeled my photography around, because I've learned that there's so much power in storytelling, and oftentimes in America, right, they're not accurately depicting certain populations, certain communities. So rather than allowing the falsified perceptions of certain communities and folks be continued on, I want to go ahead and debunk that. So I guess my processes around my photography is around humanity and around social justice. You know, I like to call myself a photographic activist, because I like to create imagery and pictures of things that people don't want to talk about. The only way for us to grow as individuals is to have uncomfortable conversations, and I like to use my camera and the pictures that I'm taking to go ahead and provoke those uncomfortable conversations. So when it comes to Solidarity Saturday, it comes to homelessness, to Heartful, those were all inspired by just the reality of where we're currently at in our country, in Sacramento, right? There's a huge homelessness population within Sacramento, within California, that a lot of people want to ignore and want to kind of skip over and sweep under the rug. And here I am just trying to make sure that it's not being swept under the rug. I think we all have the good hearts to go ahead and contribute when we can. And I noticed that a lot of folks want to give back to the community, but they don't have the platform or the capacity due to their day-to-day responsibilities to contribute. So I want to go ahead and make things easier for people. I'm not married. I don't have any kids. So my responsibilities aren't as, I'm not going to say as serious, because I do have serious commitments, but I'm not a parent, right? And those are all different things that, you know, I can't relate to, but I know that if I can come to your house and pick up a bag for you, or if I can meet you somewhere that's more convenient for yourself to want to contribute, then it eliminates kind of like that hurdle for things to get done. So, so those are the people who I kind of who have inspired me to continue this work. Like I said before, just social justice, making sure that everyone is being seen and being treated equally, is important to me.
You mentioned the Gordon Parks Foundation. I'm curious, do you know of Devin Allen?
Yes, my man from Baltimore. He's doing big things. I don't know him personally, but I follow him from afar, and I know that he's doing a lot of great work. He's actually one of the people who I actually look up to as well when it comes to mm-hmm. the black and white photography and being able to use a camera to document a storytell. Realities of the world, right?
Yeah, his work is amazing. I found him around the time of the riots, mm-hmm. The last riots, mm-hmm. set of riots, yeah.
Well, I think he had the one in Baltimore, Freddie Gray, mm-hmm. and he had that iconic shot that went on Time magazines. And
the guy was in the foreground and the police were in the background?
Yeah, yeah. He was running. Yeah. Yeah, so that was the one that went on Time magazine. And, like, I mean, he was talented already before, mm-hmm. you know, before that picture, but I think that's when everyone was able to see his eye and see the greatness behind his photography. And look at him now, right? He's doing things with Steph Curry, Under Armour.
Yeah.
He's having his own gallery. He's a real well-known name, and I'm looking forward to hopefully one day meeting him and being able to share these stories.
Of course. And did you watch the Weapon of Choice documentary, the Gordon Parks one?
I have
not. It's on HBO Max.
I don't have HBO Max, so I got to make sure I get that subscription so I can go ahead
and check
it out.
If you ever get it, definitely recommend it. It's about Gordon Parks and Devin Allen's in it too.
Okay.
Super good. So next question. How do you handle viewers who don't have the same political stance as you?
I mean, it might sound a little rude, but I just tune them out. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that my work is not for everybody, and some people don't want to have those uncomfortable conversations because they're not ready to, or because they don't want to be challenged yet, right? Or they may be stuck in their ways. I'm not here to convince you or to persuade you to look differently. I'm just here to put art out there. That will hopefully get you to be curious on asking, you know, clarifying questions, or, you know, really looking in the mirror and figuring out, are you an ally or are you, you know, an enemy, right? So my art is intended to, you know, create chaos. It's intended to make people wake up and to see the harsh realities of the world. And if you want to get down with it, more power to you. But if you're not on that same wavelength, then no love lost, right? Maybe you'll come around some point in time, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of tune it out.
When you're out in the field, is there anything that makes you uncomfortable?
I would say this. When I was doing the protests, rallies, and during, you know, obviously the social justice movements and things that are going on with police brutality, excuse me. I think I was kind of torn in between because obviously as a black man and things are going on in America, I'm hurting on the inside, I'm furious, I'm upset, I'm angry. But at the same time, I have my lens and I'm out there documenting things. And I was kind of caught in between of when do I turn that hat off of being a photographer and being an activist, right? And then when do I tuckle that hat of like, okay, let me chill and let me just refocus on photography. And I think that was a moment where I felt uncomfortable or there's some discomfort just for the fact that I wanted to do both equally and I couldn't because mm-hmm. I'm taking pictures of cops and I can't sit here and be yelling in the cop's face because then I run the risk of them taking my cameras or, you know, macing me or whatever it may be. By the same time, I'm seeing my brothers and my sisters out there going hard and I want to make sure that they know that I'm not just out here for the likes or for the Instagram, you know, likes or whatever it may be, that I'm actually in the trenches with them, mm-hmm. right? So being able to kind of find that that balance was something that brought a little discomfort, but I think the more that I got, you know, onto the streets, I was able to kind of, you know, figure out my way of making that happen.
I'm curious about how you deal with, let's say, like your social media. Like, I'm around people a lot out there,
yeah.
and then eventually I get tired and just want to, like, take a couple of days off.
Yep.
Do you ever get that? Like,
how do
you deal with that? How do you get through that?
I definitely do. I think with anything in life, when you're doing so much of it, you run the risk of having a burnout. So they say self-care is really important, right? Knowing when to turn the switch off. And that's something that I've been having a little bit more of a challenge with now that I've gone full-time with this. But I'm not a social butterfly. And people always say, yes, you are, because you can have conversations with anybody. Mm. And although I can, I'm very introverted, to be honest. Like, I'm an introvert, and I recently came across this new word called ambivert, which is basically you're introverted mm-hmm. At heart, but then when you're around people who make you feel safe and feel comfortable, you can be a little bit more extroverted.
Mm-hmm.
So they call it ambivert. Mm-hmm. So I feel like with my passion of photography and being in the streets and being able to document people's faces and document, you know, the realities of the world, I do at times get a little tired of having those deep conversations, especially when it's on heavy topics, because it's relived trauma, right? So yeah. It can be very draining. But I will say that, you know, the way I look at it is life is bigger than you. That's my motto and my mantra that I go by when it comes to my business. Life is bigger than you. So I just tap into that when I'm ever out there, knowing that, you know, those kids are going to be able to look at these images and be inspired and be motivated to make a difference in their community and in their generation. So that's my kind of like reminder when I'm like, okay, I got to go out on the streets today. Like, who am I doing it for? Why am I doing it, mm-hmm. right? And then when I am done doing it, I'll go back home, might crack me a cold one, you know, I might be able to kick my feet up, watch sports, right? And just relax, right? Yeah. To be able to recharge that battery.
So going off of that, with the whole getting involved with other people and experiencing so much, I am someone who really looks at, like, memorable moments and holds those, like, to heart. So I wanted to ask you, what are some of your most, like, memorable moments or, like, one specifically that you've kind of ran into with the Homeless to Heartful exhibition or going to Ghana with your Take 'Em Home Foundation or any other work that, like, you've done in your photographic journey with?
Yeah, that's a real tough question. but I'm glad you asked that. One of my most memorable moments, I'm trying to like dial back because there's so many that I want to kind of share. Mm-hmm. I would think just, you know, this whole homelessness to a Heartful exhibition and how it came about, right? It started in 2018 where I was basically coming back home in Sacramento and I saw there's a huge population of folks who are displaced and unhoused.
Yeah.
And seeing that there was an issue because they're right in my neighborhood. And prior to leaving the college, that wasn't the case. So coming back home and seeing it, it was definitely kind of heartbreaking to see how people were living in inhumane situations and conditions.
Yeah.
And then using that as a catalyst to kind of spark, you know, the Fill the Bag Challenge and Solidarity Saturdays. And I think the most memorable moment of this whole journey is the fact that it's coming full circle in the sense of, and it's sad because some of the same people that I'm seeing and that I saw in 2018 are still out there in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not enjoyable, but I think just the whole notion of staying at it, being consistent, and being able to understand that life is bigger than you and things that you are doing are making an impact. So to be able to not only serve the folks who are displaced, but then to also have them incorporate within my exhibit and have them there to showcase their talents and their arts and for them to make money and make sales,
mm-hmm.
I think that was really memorable for myself because I'm big on community. I'm big on giving people the platform and, you know, the shine that they rightfully deserve. and the folks who were serving every second Saturday, for them to feel comfortable to show me their art and for me to go ahead and leverage that opportunity to them to be a part of the exhibit was really special. So I think that was probably one of my most memorable moments, is having the exhibit, having a lot of people come out to show love, and to we raised a good amount. We raised a good amount that day on Friday to go ahead to funnel back into the community. So I think those are, that experience is one of my most memorable amongst others, but that one for sure is right at the top of them.
So you consider yourself an activist. What does it mean to you as an activist and an artist to use your platform to allow voices and these stories to not just be seen, but also be heard?
It's everything. You know, there's different type of learners out there. There's folks who are visual, folks who are auditory, kinesthetic, right? There's folks out there who want to showcase their activism, but that may not be the ones who want to get in front of a large audience and, you know, hold a march or whatever it may be. Some of them want to use their creativity to go ahead and depict the harsh realities of that they're facing or that the community is facing. So to be able to use photography as a medium and as a vessel that God has given me is very special, because I understand that there are other kids, other folks who are inspired by my work, who may see that my black and white portraits or my community work, with whether it be back home with the kids in Ghana or, you know, the folks who are displaced. There is a way to kind of connect the two, right? And I think being able to use that platform and use the medium of photography has opened my eyes up in so many different ways on the impact that I'm having, not only myself, but the folks who are following, and the folks who may not say anything, but, you know, deeply can connect to my art, right? So I love the fact that photography and, you know, being an activist can kind of blend in together.
With black and white photography, there's a lot of, like, impact that comes with that, but what kind of impact does it make on the story that you are trying to tell compared to, like, if you're using color?
I get that question asked quite often, right? And I mean, for me, I think black and white just leads to ambiguity, right? Mm-hmm. You know, colors lead to emotions. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, I don't like folks going into my pictures or seeing my artwork with, you know, already a preconceived notion of what it could be or what it's saying to them based off the colors, mm-hmm. right? With black and white, especially my portraits, I like to make sure that you can see all the wrinkles in the skin, you can see the scar marks, you can see the blemishes, you can see everything on that face, because it allows you to really focus and to see exactly, like, what am I seeing, mm-hmm. right? What do the scars mean, right? What does, you know, the crooked eye mean, mm-hmm. right? So just being able to go into black and whites, for me, just has a lot more impact and mm-hmm. allows your mind to kind of wander, and it kind of engages more conversation with, you know, the folks who are actually observing mm-hmm. the art. So black and white's my niche. I will, you know, dibble and dabble with the color, but definitely black and whites, when it comes to portraitures, allow you to kind of see the face for what it really is, and allows you to kind of have, you know, more in-depth conversation with people who are actually observing it as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. I think black and white, definitely your skill to make a good composition is, like, mm-hmm. so much more needed, mm-hmm. because you can have a pretty picture with pretty colors, and you don't need to have a good composition.
Bingo.
For sure, black and white, it's very moving.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would actually love to talk more about the Homeless to Heartful exhibition. Just for a little bit of context, it's the purpose of this is to bring awareness to the alarming strike of homelessness within the Sacramento region, educate folks on the matter while also providing a reminder on the powerful effects of kindness and humanity. So we are seniors in a photography cohort. We are taking a class currently about, like, the relationship of land. What is, obviously you grew up in Sacramento. What is kind of, can you talk more about, like, your relationship to this area and, like, how that can influence you to kind of tell more stories within this region?
Yeah, so I love Sacramento. You know, obviously being born and raised here, I take a lot of pride of being from Sacramento. If you were to ask some of my soccer teammates back in college about, like, how much I would just talk about the Kings and Sacramento being the next great mm-hmm. city, they'd always give me a lot of, like, slack about it, right? So mm-hmm. I'm very proudful to be from Sacramento. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful city and a beautiful state, right? So coming back home after 10 years of being in college and then seeing that there was a huge spike in homelessness, it really broke my heart, right? And this is, like, literally around the corner from, like, my childhood elementary and middle school. So, and I see a lot of kids are walking down that street. So I wanted to make sure that, one, the folks who are experiencing homelessness were able to kind of be seen as individuals, because there is a huge stigma associated to homelessness. And it can be quite ignorant, right? I think it's really important for us to have these conversations with people who are oftentimes being overlooked and overshadowed, to be able to get that perspective on what may have happened to lead to homelessness, right? Because if you ask a lot of folks who are on the street, homelessness, it was not by choice, right? They were either victims of, you know, rent control, victims of being timed out of the government assistance. A lot of folks who I've spoken to are either veterans or, you know, foster youth or former foster youth, right? So when you really get to talk to these folks and the individuals and really get to know them on a more human level, you start realizing that they were just given a really difficult, you know, set of hands of cards, right? So for myself, when it comes to being from Sacramento, seeing the huge spike in homelessness and being able to use my camera to go ahead and rightfully depict what's going on and allow them the platform and the space to share their truth and their stories, I think there's so much value in that because, like I said before, they're oftentimes being overlooked and they're not given the equal time of the day that we all are, right, when it comes to being asked questions about, like, you know, how your day was going or things of that nature. They're not being asked that on a daily basis, right? So for myself, I found that as an area where I wanted to go ahead and clean things up. I know I'm just like one person, but we have a great team who comes out every second Saturday. Folks who are supporting me on Instagram or social media platforms or who are donating, who are contributing to the cause. It goes a long ways to clean things up, right? And for everyone who is from Sacramento, I think there should be a sense of pride of making sure that we're cleaning our city up because it's the capital of California, right? And it's really important for us to just see these folks as individuals and not as, you know, people who are homeless, but more so as an individual who was, you know, dealt a difficult hand. And bring in more kindness, more compassion, and more love.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned your love for Sacramento. I'm also born and raised here, and for a while I wasn't really enjoying being here. Mm-hmm. And that was before I got into, like, street photography. Mm-hmm. And once I was able to, you know, look at our city through, a photographic eye, I began to love it a lot more. And talking to photographers from Sacramento, because there's not too many, like, I feel like, that are doing big things like mm-hmm. you are. And it is inspirational for sure.
Most definitely. And I think, like you said, the perspective of having the lens and being, the lens and being able to, like you said, walk around the city of Sacramento and you're seeing things from different angle, from different perspective, mm-hmm. right? Because when you're driving around Sacramento, you may see things, but then when you're actually on the street and you're actually walking even a one block radius and you're being intentional, like, I'm going to spend the next 30 minutes, a minute, an hour on this block. I'm not going to go anywhere else. I'm going to stay right here. You'll be able to see things that your eye may not have been trained to see. So yeah, I think even walking around, seeing people, seeing the landscape, seeing the architecture of our buildings, we have a lot of interesting people out here, and I say that in a good way. Mm-hmm. I think that's why there's so much power in the street photography and being able to have these conversations with people, because you start realizing the different talents and the different things that we all have in common, and that can spark another conversation, right, with other people. So, and you realize Sacramento's really small, right? So I think that's the strength in, one, photography, but then also community. Mm-hmm.
Did you eat this morning?
I did not. I did not.
Man, come
and I woke up early. I know. I'm not a breakfast person. Like, I'm with John. I'm not a breakfast person.
I used to not be. Me too. But then I started lifting, and then I got hungry all the time.
That's different, because after a big workout, you got to kind of put the protein in your body to replenish the, you know, which worked out. But, I mean, I'm more of a lunch kind of person, and I just, you know, go hard at dinner too. So, but according to my stomach, it's telling me, like, hey, stop skipping breakfast.
So going back to the Take 'Em Home Foundation, how did that come to be? Like, how did you get involved, and, like, maybe talk about the process of, like, how you guys decided on where you're gonna go, why Ghana, and maybe kind of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I mean, before I even get into that, I gotta give a special shout out to both brothers who are part of this campaign. My brother Kofi Ibsen from Black Star United, and then also Kyan Baker from The City Eats. Me and Kofi have known each other for about 12 years, and we've always wanted to go back home to Africa and take care of our people. He's Ghanaian, actually. I'm Nigerian, so we felt like, since we're both from Africa, and we wanted to kind of, you know, make the diaspora closer to Africa. So we had this kind of idea maybe like 5-6 years ago about how do we go ahead and take care of the babies back home. In a way in which is very empowering, and we can also use our resources and the connection that we have in America to go home and bless the babies back home. And just the community of Africa, right? So this Take 'Em Home campaign has been going on for the last 1.5 years. And we started off with just wanting to send them back home toiletries, clothes, and shoes, and non-perishable items or food items, so they can go ahead and kind of just, you know, get the right, you know, nutrition and, you know, get the right clothes so they can feel good about themselves as they go to school. And then Kofi went back home in December and was able to see the kids for the first time. And while he was there, he was seeing that we're doing great things, right? We're able to get them clothes, shoes, food, and all the things in the works. But when he got there, he noticed that, one, they weren't having filtered water in the village at the school site that they were at. So we went ahead and used some of the funds that we were able to raise through community and corporations and nonprofits to go ahead and provide them with, you know, a purified water tank. And then he came back home saying, hey, guys, we got to do something that's more impactful, right? Like, how can we go ahead and, you know, do something that's more legacy, right? Don't get us wrong. Like, sending home clothes, sending home shoes and all that is very helpful and useful. But how do we go ahead and make something that's more of a legacy? So while out there, he noticed that there was an admin building that hadn't been finished in over 10 years, right? So coming back home, he was like, hey, guys, let's go ahead and, you know, shift our efforts in the donations and use that towards, you know, really finishing that admin building. And if anyone is in education or has experienced education, right, it's really hard to teach kids and to grade and to have, you know, a break from the youth when you're all in the same building, same classroom, right? So, and this is not good for the overall vibe of teaching students. If you're just with them 24/7, you're not able to kind of, you know, separate and, you know, grading papers or taking a break for yourself. So we went ahead and called upon the community to go ahead and raise more funds to, you know, finish that admin building, which we're able to complete. So then we wanted to make sure that we got back home to do a ribbon cutting of it, and also to do some feeds out there, some community feeds and for different communities. So we're there for a week. We went to four different communities to do feeds where we were able to feed the community with over 200 meals for every feed. And then we went to see that school and where we had a ceremony to do the ribbon cutting and to see the kids. It was so special, right? To see the kids that we actually been in communication with the last year and a half in person, and to see the effect that we were able to have on them was very special. So we're able to donate 10 laptops. We got them a lot of math books, English books from local schools in Elk Grove Unified School District, school supplies, just to make sure that we were able to close that achievement gap from, you know, Africa and then also from the states within that population. So it was real special. We're going to be doing this hopefully every year or every other year. We still haven't had our debriefing meeting to kind of, you know, figure that out. But be on the lookout for those who are listening. Take Them Home campaign. Like I said, follow my brother Kofi Ibsen, Black Star United, or Kayim Baker at The City Eats, and you'll get more information on our continued efforts of connecting the diaspora to Africa.
So for listeners who want to help but don't know where to start, how can they get involved?
I would encourage them to follow me on my social media. That'll be a good way to start off, and then you can DM me. My social media is at @make_it_Madu. I make it Madu. That'll be probably the first step to kind of getting breaking the ice. Once they get in contact with me, then we can go ahead and kind of, you know, inform them on what we do and how to go about raising funds and, you know, the next time we're going to be going out to Ghana or to Africa in general to do the great work that we're doing. So I would just say, yeah, seeing me on Instagram.
Thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title and description, represent the views and opinions of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the Sacramento State CRISJ and/or the Building Justice podcast committee. All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice. Time for building justice.